You're listening to a podcast from Washington Post Live, bringing the Post's newsroom to life on stage. On January 29th, the eve of President Trump's first State of the Union address, the Washington Post brought together influential lawmakers, political operatives, and plugged-in analysts to preview the president's speech and look ahead to the coming legislative year. In this segment, Communication in the Trump Era, Washington Post politics and accountability anchor Libby Casey sits down with a panel of seasoned political operatives and a congressional rising star to get their predictions for the president's State of the Union speech and to discuss and debate the relevance of the speech in modern political times. The panel includes Democratic Congressman Eric Swalwell from California, Ari Fleischer, former White House press secretary for George W. Bush, Donna Brazile, the former chairwoman of the Democratic National Committee, and David Urban, president of the American Continental Group and former Trump campaign senior advisor. Let's listen.
I hope you know I got the questions in advance, and
that's what I was looking for.
I made sure that I shared them.
She did.
I shared them.
I asked for them. She won't give them to me.
I shared them, and it's going to be really fun.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much to all of you for being here. Oh, man. Fireworks are starting already. I'm Libby Casey. I'm our on-air politics reporter here at the Washington Post, and we're thrilled to have this panel today to talk about communications in the Trump era. Great moment to do it in advance of tomorrow night's speech. So let me introduce my guests. Congressman Eric Swalwell, Democrat who's represented California's 15th district in the Bay Area since 2013. Thanks for being here. Ari Fleischer served as the White House press secretary from 2001 to 2003 under President George W. Bush, and he now runs his own strategic communications firm. Hi, Ari. Donna Brazile, the former chairwoman of the Democratic National Committee.
I'll give her a nice round of applause, Donna.
I'm a local girl.
You are a local girl. She also, of course, managed former Vice President Al Gore's 2000 presidential campaign.
How'd that turn out for you?
Thank you, Donna. Oh.
Hanging chads, swinging chads, and my favorite, those pregnant chads.
Hey, it ain't over till it's over. Amen. We'll see what happens next. And yeah. David Urban is a former senior advisor to the Trump presidential campaign and currently serves as president of the American Continental Group here in Washington. Thanks, David, for being here. Before I get started, let me remind the audience, both here in the room as well as watching online, that you can send us questions. Use that hashtag PostLive, and we'll get to some of those later on. So we have some talkers here, so we'll try to keep this answer a little bit brief. What do you want to hear tonight from the president versus what you expect to hear tomorrow night? Congressman, let's start with you, and we'll go down the aisle.
Yeah, well, I hope he speaks to the millions of Americans who are not yet feeling the thrust of this economy. I mean, there's no denying that the stock market is up, unemployment is at near full employment, and the GDP hovers around 3%. But there's so many people that I talk to who I grew up with or who live in my district who couldn't weather a $500 emergency, a car tire going flat, a washing machine going out, a kid going to the emergency room. People are not saving more. They're going deeper and deeper into debt. So how does this tax bill reach them and help lift their hopes and dreams?
Do you expect to hear that message?
I hope so. Yeah, that's who he needs to talk to, because we know who is benefiting from his tax plan, but I think a lot of Americans still want to know, how is this going to help them?
Ari?
I want to hear normal. I want to hear, yeah.
What does that mean to you?
I want to hear a president who does what presidents do, unifies us, talks about bigger things that unite a country. The Trump presidency has just been such a fascinating one to watch on so many levels. He has so many accomplishments and so many good things that he has done, has the potential to do. But it seems like every time he moves the ball down the field, he gets a penalty flag for unnecessary roughness. And it's the spontaneous moments that get him. So at a moment like this, when you're talking to 30, 40, 50 million Americans, unify. And the other reason I say that is I'm convinced now that the American people in electing Donald Trump knew they were electing somebody with warts and all. Mexicans are rapists. It doesn't surprise anybody. There's a settlement with a porn star. The reason is the American people hate Washington so much, think this place is so broken, they didn't care. And they want to send somebody who would get things done. So they sent a disruptor. Now he's entering the phase of his presidency where he needs less disruption and more getting things done. because they didn't elect disruption for disruption's sake. They elected disruption to get things done's sake. That's what he has to deliver on.
Along those same lines, the president promised to come to Washington, D.C., drain the swamps, and to end politics as usual. He has been an unusual president. I totally agree with my colleague here. I think tomorrow night the president gets an opportunity to tell the American people what he's accomplished over the last year. Of course, he's going to tout his tax plan, which is not very, very popular. But I also believe the president is going to try to recast himself as a different reality TV star. Someone who has knowledge about the world. He's going to brag about his trip to Davos. He's going to give us a lot of dazzling numbers to show that he has made a lot of progress in jobs, stock market. He's going to take credit for a lot of things. The question tomorrow night, when he finished his speech and get back to the White House and start tweeting, what is the president? What is the lasting impression we will have of this president? Is he still going to be the divider in chief, or will he come across to most Americans as a commander in chief? I don't have a lot of expectations for this president, because every time I think the president has hit a new milestone to reset. Sort of reset his presidency, he's gone back into form. And the question is, will he return to the Donald Trump, the populist firebrand on the campaign trail in 2016, or the new president that wishes to unite the country?
David?
So I get the easy part, right? I get the cleanup, right, after Ari, Donna, and the congressman. I think you're going to see an aspirational Donald Trump tomorrow. I think it's going to be a shining city on the hill kind of speech. I think the president does very well. As you recall, last year when he came, went up to the Hill and spoke to the Congress, he had that kind of speech. It wasn't a State of the Union. It was an aspirational speech. I think that after the speech was done, everybody, you know, most pundits said, wow, what a great speech. And people wanted to see him govern like that. And as Ari said, has been said, the president was elected to come to D.C., to break some china and shake things up, because I can tell you the folks out on the campaign trail are none too happy with the current state of play. And so it's tough to be a disruptor and then a uniter at the same time. It's a very difficult fine line to walk. The president's entering a phase, I think, of the presidency now, is most people acknowledge. If you're going to get anything done, right, on DACA, this incredible offer, path of citizenship for close to 2 million folks, something that I'll point out that neither President Bush, President Obama, President Clinton even offered to do because they couldn't get it done on their own caucuses. I know in the Republican Congress, it's not popular. It's not popular amongst a great deal of Democrats. I think that must be a pretty good bill, right, if both parties don't like it. So we'll see where it ends up. But I think at the end of the day, you know, they're going to have an aspirational speech, something that I think everyone will say, wow, that was a great job. Now let's see what happens on Wednesday.
You know, David, to your point, I thought Tuesday during that, about 3 weeks ago, was the best day in his presidency. He let the cameras in. I think a lot of people thought that is who they were electing, the guy sitting with Republicans and Democrats and wheeling and dealing and saying, you come up with something on immigration, I'll sign it. But as Ari had said, he can't put two good days together, because about, you know, 2 days later, we saw what he said and felt about these African countries, and the deal that they brought to him blew up. And so I still think, you know, Congress can collaborate, but we need somebody at the White House who's going to take the deals that we come up with.
So would you vote for the plan as it stands now?
I'd vote for the Aguilar-Hurd plan, which...
No, that's not my question. My question was, would you support path of citizenship for close to 2 million folks, solving the DACA problem for a wall?
Yeah, I would vote for increased border security, which we have said would include a wall, but not to cut legal immigration. That was never on the table, and now the president wants to.
So you want a more narrow.
So what do you say to the DACA folks, DACA beneficiaries, those 2 million folks that stand to become citizens? What would you say to those folks?
That we're not going to bring you in and then kick out your family members who have already came.
Okay, so when they show up at your town hall next month.
Let me just ask you, David, does this come up in the speech tomorrow? Does the president address this head on? Does he pitch his immigration proposal?
Does he treat it as a starting point for negotiations?
Now, you'll notice,
there's a big cloud. I mean, the government shutdown is likely to occur again.
I mean, we're looking at February 8th, and then also a deadline in March for the Dreamers. We have two big deadlines coming up.
And so I'll acknowledge, right, the congressman, your colleagues on the right are just as upset about this proposal as well.
That's right. But again, Graham and Durbin took him a deal, and he said, you make the deal, I'll sign it. And we saw...
I want to just swing us back to the communications perspective here, because, as you mentioned, the president last year during his joint address had a lot of successes by the metrics of a presidential speech, staying on message, staying on the teleprompter. And then within that same week, big news broke about his attorney general during the campaign, meeting with the Russian ambassador to the U.S. The attorney general ended up recusing himself from the Russia investigation. So how long-lasting is the State of the Union bump? And can it all be destroyed Wednesday morning with the wrong tweet?
Well,
you said Wednesday morning is going to be
Tuesday night?
Tuesday night.
No, it won't be that fast.
He seems to be more of a morning tweeter.
It's always a challenge for presidents to corral the message and get everything going their way, as opposed to all the various inputs you have when you're at the White House. International, something goes wrong, something happens in a domestic agency. It's uncontrollable often. The problem, though, with President Trump is, and it's of his own making, he too often creates his own problem going forward. He doesn't stay on that role. And this is where I agree with it. And I say this as somebody out of frustration, because I want him to be successful. And on policy, there's a lot about Donald Trump I like. In terms of the nature and the way he has conducted his presidency, there's a lot that I do not like. And this is a big part of it. Presidents have to have that discipline to stay on message. If he had more of it, he'd have a much more successful presidency. And if he did, last point, the 10 Democrats in the 10 Trump states who are up for re-election will be under massive pressure to vote with Trump. The reason they're not voting with Trump all the time right now is because he's not very popular. If he can get his popularity up to about 50% nationally, it'll be a sea change in Washington, because those 10 Democrats will have to vote for him, and a lot more will get done.
And we do anticipate infrastructure coming up as an issue that a lot of those red state Democrats would love to get behind.
But ahead, there are also 23 members of Congress that won in districts where Hillary carried. So we also know that there's a lot of politics in 2018. I want to talk about the weather. The forecast tomorrow is light winds with the possibility of snow. I'm a weather wimp, so I should talk about weather. But there's another cloud that continues to hover around this presidency, and that is the Trump-Russia investigation. And the question will he talk about that tomorrow?
Of course not. Why should he?
Well, I'm just...
This is about government, not nonsense.
But this is not nonsense.
The election's over. This has been the Democratic excuse since the day after the election.
This is not an excuse. When our democracy, when we have a foreign, once upon a time, Ari, you and I would agree that if a foreign government interfered in our election, we would both complain about
Agreed.
It. Okay? So it is important for us to understand, with an election coming up in less than, 280 some odd days, that we understand what issues we need to resolve. If you look at what has happened in Europe, they have built a firewall against foreign aggression and interference. What have we done? What have we done on Capitol Hill? So, yes, this is something the president of the United States should be concerned about, because he should be concerned about the democracy, the health of our
democracy. I would like to hear from the congressman. Do you want to hear Democrats talk about Russia tomorrow? I mean, you're on the Intel Committee. You've been very involved in some of these behind-the-scenes issues that the rest of us aren't privy to. Congressman Joe Kennedy tomorrow night talk about it?
What I think the president could say, which would be unifying, is that we are going to put together an independent commission, just as we did after Pearl Harbor, just as we did after weapons of mass destruction, just as we did after September 11th. And I wrote the bill with a Republican support that would do that, to look at not, you know, the issues that Bob Mueller is looking at, but what do we do to secure the ballot box
Absolutely.
In 2018 and 2020? Most Americans believe that Russia interfered and that we ought to do something to make sure they don't do it again. And that would have bipartisan support, but he hasn't acknowledged that.
So I'm just extremely hopeful that our national security apparatus isn't waiting for the Congress to tell them what to do. I'm hopeful that FBI counterterrorism, the FBI folks have been out on their toes, and I'm sure that they've done this. I'm sure the NSA has been leaning forward. I'm sure the CIA has been leaning forward. If our United States of America, if Americans are sitting home waiting for the Congress to act on this, going to wait a long time.
But I don't know if you saw Attorney General Sessions.
I would not.
But we need presidential leadership.
I think a commission is a nice way to kick the can down the road on things.
Let me throw the news.
Yeah, the news of the day.
Presidential leadership.
We saw the FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe that is stepping down. That news came out today. We heard Phil Rucker talk about that earlier. What do you do from a communication standpoint with that news? Is that going to really overshadow tomorrow night, Ari?
Oh, goodness, no. This is such a Washington story. The number of people in America who know who the FBI director is nobody. The number who know the deputy director, this is Washington news. Now, look, I think what is important is we all have an FBI we can have faith in, trust in. I do think the investigation of Hillary has raised a whole lot of issues that have not been adequately addressed, including the fact now we learned that Hillary was sending emails to Barack Obama as president. president. And when the Comey report came out, they cleaned up the name, took Obama out, and
made
a senior government official.
I just want to pause this here because this sounds to be your communication strategy of pivoting the news, which is certainly a fair perspective. Absolutely.
And I'm entitled to.
Absolutely.
I'm allowed to have my opinion. I don't have to just go with anybody else.
But in terms of the communication strategy, is that something that Republicans need to do this week? I mean, do you bring it back to that, to Hillary Clinton, or do you try to move on and talk infrastructure, immigration,
jobs? Here's why I objected to what Donna said. I am all for fortifying America, and you are 100% right, it should already be underway, about outside Russian election interference. An attack on one party is an attack on all parties.
Correct.
But face it, the whole issue of a Russia-Trump collusion is about whether or not Donald Trump and his campaign cooperated with Russia to hack the DNC and Podesta's emails or to disseminate them. That's what collusion's about, and there's no evidence that that's the case.
Congressman, do you bring this up if you're Congressman Joe Kennedy tomorrow night giving the Democratic response, or do you just steer clear of
it? I wouldn't look backward. I would look forward and say that we have a responsibility to protect our democracy, and that's something both parties should be interested in.
How important is the State of the Union at this point?
How important
is the State of the Union? And we can certainly bring your next point. Is that going to make news this week? Are Americans going to tune in and focus on that, or are they going to be thinking about these issues that you're all bringing up?
They're thinking about their recipes for the Super Bowl.
Right, I was going to say, right? So, I think, look, most Americans want to know how your roads are going to get fixed, how bridges that are collapsing are going to get fixed, schools that are failing or be repaired. That's what people want to hear about, secure borders, path of citizenship for these DACA kids, right? And I believe that the Congress can get this done, right? You can sit down, as the congressman said, the president in the room, and negotiate it outside of politics. Unfortunately, as Donna and everyone here knows, you heard Minority Leader Pelosi up here talking about it, 23 seats to pick up to impeach the president, right? That's what kind of the buzz is, right? And a lot of bipartisanship may not get done. I think the president's in his best interest to be aspirational, to talk about the shining city on the hill, how we can make America better for all Americans, the rising tide, all those things, right? The standard deduction of $24,000.
How do you sell that?
That doesn't help your member, people in your district.
So I'd love to hear from you. How do you sell that? It does not sound like, from the indications we're getting from the White House, that the president plans to do a road tour, take the message out there like we've seen past presidents do. Although Sarah Sanders sort of punted on that today and said, we'll let you know of our travel plans. Is that a missed opportunity, Ari?
Yes, it is.
Yes.
Yeah, that part of the presidency has always perplexed me on why. And again, when I said be normal, there are certain normal things that people in this town do because it's effective. It's an effective way to connect with the constituents who are the bosses.
Right.
The president's style is so much more through Twitter and through other means that I think only goes skin deep and often hurt himself. So, yeah, I would love to see him go out and meet with the people who are getting these bonuses, getting the pay raises, getting a $15 minimum wage now through the actual natural economy instead of a government-dictated mandate. These are the way the president can connect with people and broaden his base.
So why not do this road tour?
Because it's called message discipline. And once upon a time, when you laid out the three or four pillars of your State of the Union, what happened next was, you know, you go out there and you start selling your program, you sell your vision. This president has a hard time keeping his, what I call, his eyes on the prize. And part of the problem, I think, is that if he goes out there, he likes to rally his base, he likes red meat, he likes to return to that fiery populace who ran in 2016. And that's not a unifying president. That's a president who's going to constantly campaign, and when he campaigns, he divides.
It's also not enough. No president can run just on their base alone.
That's correct.
Right. That's why I think you'll see a pivot. I think you'll see a pivot here with immigration, trying to strike a deal. I think the president does want to sign a deal. I think he wants to protect the DACA kids, so I think you'll see a coming together on that.
Does his team want to see that?
Yeah, I think they do. I think you're going to see that happen. I mean,
because there just seem to be different opinions in the White House.
I think that's a perception, but I believe that, you know, no one's sending anybody home, right? And so I think that you're going to see everybody wants a deal to get done. I think the same thing on infrastructure. And these are great issues, not just for Americans, but they're great political issues because they require those 10 Senate Democrats, as Ari talked about, right? Senator Manchin was on Sunday, right, talking about, sounded pretty Republican to me.
David, I agree on infrastructure.
He sounded like that last year, too.
But I agree on infrastructure. That, you know, to support this innovation economy, we have to move people around and have a 21st century
Absolutely.
Roads, bridges, tunnels, green
airports,
energy solutions.
Right,
yeah. When the president came to Congress last year and said that, he said, I'm going to invest $1 trillion in infrastructure. You know who stood up? The Democrats. You know
That's
who stayed
correct.
Seated? The Republicans. And so he has a problem in his own base that they don't support that. But the second problem is that It's a lesson my parents taught me. Don't burn a hole in your pocket with, you know, your first paycheck. The Republicans have spent nearly $2 trillion on this tax cut that now we are almost unable to fund any infrastructure spending, and that's going to be a real problem.
I want to hear from you all about accountability, because when the president goes out tomorrow night and talks about accomplishments but also looks forward, here are my goals, here's what I aspire to do, how important is it that there's follow-through? Last year we heard him talk about building a wall, hasn't happened yet, repealing Obamacare, hasn't really happened, tax cuts, big tax package, that did happen. But is the American populace watching what the president does, or are they listening to news reports or really commentary reports at places like Fox News who are giving him A pluses when some of the follow through isn't there? What do we look at 6 months from
now? I think this will be a check and balance election, which seems quite simple. But I think what Americans will be looking for is whether they have a Congress that can collaborate with the president where it helps them and lifts them. I think infrastructure, immigration are two areas where you can find cohesion. But whether they're willing to stand up and be a check on the president when he tries to follow through on the wall or, you know, the Muslim ban or some of the other policies. I think it's going to be a check and balance election. I don't mind that he hasn't followed through on the wall. You know, quite frankly, I don't mind that he hasn't followed through on some of these other hurtful policies. So I don't think we should hit him over the head for that, because that would hurt people if you actually forced them into following
his through. Best numbers came as a result of meeting with Leader Pelosi and Leader Schumer. And everybody, I mean, the American people, his numbers finally came out of the weeds a little bit. And you saw the American people say, wow, he can work with the Democrats. He can work with other people. I think the president needs to spend at least a third of his speech tomorrow night not talking to his base, but talking to that mom and dad out there in America who's concerned still about their job security, who want to know if this tax package will trickle down to them. And if so, will it help, you know, improve their job status, their wages, et cetera. If the president can reach that milestone, maybe and perhaps we'll see an improvement in his numbers.
Let me just ask Ari real quick, how important was follow-through for President Bush, and do you see it, has it changed? Is there not that level of accountability right now?
It's always important. It was important for President Obama, too, but support from the American people for a president is always driven by two factors. One, I like and I believe in the president. There is a personal element. It's a trust, a connection element. Even if they have no accomplishments, they're fighting for you. You believe in them. That's important, and Trump has that with his base. The second area that could broaden his base is actual accomplishment. Tax reform, I present to you, is one, and I think as the year goes along, it's going to continue to really resonate positively as economic growth picks up and wages are likely to rise. And Trump is in a position to get substantial credit for it. Secondly, though, comes with that, is if he can get infrastructure and immigration done, that's a powerful three. Tax reform, infrastructure, and immigration, way more than either of his predecessors got done. So that is a potential for a lot of trust and base expansion through accomplishment. We'll see what happens. We'll see how the year goes.
And I would just say that the thing that looms large, to kind of use Don as metaphor, the cloud, is that, you know, the government, we still have to keep the government open in a
That's
week.
Right.
We have to raise the debt ceiling.
Right.
There are two supplementals for emergency spending for disasters. And then you're going to get to DACA. And then you're going to get to infrastructure. There's going to be a great deal of fatigue in the Congress, in this town, about spending money, about cooperating. There's gonna be a lot of fighting going back and forth to get those things that they need to do done. I mean, when I worked back here, I used to work on the Hill many years ago, and we passed 13 spending bills every year. Right. Subcommittee markup, full committee markup.
And there was no filibusters.
Right, there was a schoolhouse rock, right?
I'm just
a
bill on
Capitol Hill, right?
It was like,
I remember those days.
The government used to work, right? And I believe that this government can work again like that. And people tend, we go from crisis to crisis here, and it's become normal. That's just not into this
president. But what gives you faith that it can return to that?
I'm not certain. Certainly, you know, I would hope it can, but that's the part of the Congress's responsibility to go through normal order, take bills up, have hearings and markets. It's not very sexy. It's pretty run-of-the-mill, boring.
But can the president have a strong voice in the process of encouraging it?
That's a lot of the Congress, and that's why the president was sent here, right? Because to break some china, to shake things up, and quite frankly, the Congress needs to get moving.
And you know, in fairness, and I've been very critical of President Trump when he has said things like the S-hole statements that he made. I was very vociferous criticizing him for that, and I always will be. But it works in both directions. when Democrats initially refused to show up at a State of the Union, at his inaugural event, and tomorrow we're hearing about Democrats are going to boycott his State of the Union. This is part of the destructive atmosphere of Washington that everybody needs to stop.
Let's hear from
the
congressman on that.
We have to get back to that person.
Yeah, I mean, the congressman plans to attend tomorrow night.
I was at the inauguration. Afterwards, I sat at a lunch next to Kellyanne Conway and Sheldon Adelson, and it was a tough day. I took the first flight home. It was a tough day to be a Democrat that day.
Sheldon took your money, probably,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Well, after the treatment by many Republicans, after I call the treatment of President Barack Obama at the State of the Union, I don't have a lot of faith and confidence in any member of Congress with regard to, you know, the State of the Union. So I'm just going to let that go by me.
But the boycott has to stop.
Look. I am a former Hill staffer. I respect the office of the presidency, but I also believe it goes two ways when it comes to respect. And you cannot expect Democrats to hold all of these high standards, moral standards, every other standard. And then when it comes to, you know, expressing one's views, there are a lot of members who are quite offended. There are a lot of Americans who are quite offended by the president's remarks regarding those countries, the continent of Africa, Haiti, El Salvador, Honduras, etc. Yeah. And I think many of those members, some of the members I know, I've talked to a few of them personally, have decided that they will not show up. There are some who will show up tomorrow, and they will show up with kente cloth and other symbols to show that these countries, especially the continent of Africa, you know, we respect the continent. We love the people of Africa. We love the people of Haiti. We love the people of El Salvador. And they are going to show that as well tomorrow.
Congressman, what does this do for tone? I mean, how do you think Democrats need to comport themselves tomorrow and this week as we have this tradition?
I'm showing up. I think it's a personal decision for each member. I'm showing up because I want to be a check on the president. I think that's the role of Congress. I want them to see that I and my colleagues are there and that we're going to work with them where we can and hold them accountable where we need to. But I think you can also make a statement, as Donna pointed out. I know women will also be wearing black in support of the Time's Up Me Too movement. So I think those statements are important. I also don't think, you know, we want to make news. We want to let his policy be heard, and then we should respond as vigorously as we can with public sentiment afterwards.
I hear a desire from all of you that the president stick to the script, that he stick to the teleprompter. Does it benefit him, though, with his base or otherwise, to go rogue, to throw in some some off-the-cuff remarks? Do you see room there? I mean, it certainly makes for conversation. But what does it say about the presidency, and what does it do to his political capital?
Yeah, not tomorrow night.
No,
I agree. And much less so going forward. You know, again, the Trump's success, if it will be successful down the road, meaning he won't lose the Congress in 18, and who knows about re-election in 20, it's too soon to say, is going to be based on him getting things done, not just disruption. The American people took that chance electing him because they thought he could. They thought a businessman going to Washington, the place of the politicians, the businessman could get things done. He's got to fulfill that end of the promise to be a successful president. Less of that unnecessary roughness rhetoric and more normalcy is the future for Trump.
David, that teleprompter went out 1 year. God forbid.
Yes, I recall.
Bill Clinton gave it by memory.
I was there, but Bill Clinton.
Okay, so note to the White House. Big print on the paper. Bring it in.
Hydrate. Abandon those Diet Cokes. Hydrate so that he, you know, also looked the part as he read the script. But tomorrow night, the president is bringing in several Americans, heroes, people that we all applaud like he did last year. And we owe it to them because many of the people that he will honor tomorrow night and pay tribute to are people that we admire, that have inspired us with their bravery. And so I would hope that, again, this is a night for all Americans to tune in. He is the president of the United States. And give him an opportunity to make his case to the American people. And the next day, as many of us know, we will dissect the speech and point out his shortcomings. I want to say one thing.
Please.
The resistance is growing, in large part because of Donald Trump. And tomorrow night, for those who are still appalled at the election of President Trump, they get an opportunity to also go out there and speak out. And I want to make sure that people understand there are millions of our fellow citizens who did not vote for the president, who've been waiting for the president to pivot, and they have grown increasingly frustrated with this president and his policies. And I expect that they will also have a say when his speech is over with.
So, Donna, with the Democratic strategist hat on, is there a benefit to the president tweeting something controversial the next day, going off message, talking about lying?
I look forward to it. Now, I know you said that he's not a midnight tweeter. Maybe it's the time of the morning I wake up, but it looks as though he puts his ideas together the night before, and in the morning he goes, woof. So I'm looking forward to those tweets. You know.
I mean, Congressman, do you look forward to them, or is there a difference between, you know, the political strategy versus what it means to be a functioning Congress and a functioning government? And
well, they bring anxiety for everyday working people. I represent, you know, a district on the West Coast, and you know, we don't think it's funny or something you should be loose with to just poke somebody who has nuclear weapons in the eye unless you have a strategy behind it. If there was a strategy to dealing with North Korea that, and this was a tactic of that, I may be able to go along with it. But no one believes that this is part of an overall strategy and that this is just bringing us, you know, closer to being attacked unnecessarily. That's what worries me.
Although I will say, for the first time, the North Koreans and the South Koreans are talking at the table, going to the Olympics. And this president has the luxury of kicking the can down the road, as many presidents have.
And we should welcome that.
Might want to give him a pass. I want to give him a pass on the North Korea.
That's a good thing.
I tell you, one area we'll all be talking about by the end of the week, and that is how many people viewed the State of the Union.
Right.
And I'm sure the president is going to tout his numbers. So I'm looking, George W. Bush has the record at 60 million, I think, followed by Barack Obama, 60 million following the tragedy of 9/11 and President Obama, his first year in office. So we'll see where the president will line up with the numbers game as well. But, you know, since we're going into Super Bowl week, we just have to, you know, bring out the numbers.
But will that be a reflection of...
It might be a tough briefing for Sarah.
Yeah, for Sarah. Sarah Sanders?
Well, remember the last time there was a press briefing about numbers?
Yes, yes, yeah. Okay.
Crowd sizes, anything
to
do with sizes.
Is that a reflection of the current presidency, or is that a reflection of State of the Union and the media environment right now? If the numbers are low, if Americans don't tune in, is that has the State of the Union diminished in its importance with this modern era of constant communication?
No. The State of the Union remains paramount, remains an essential feature of our democracy, and it really is a time for people to tune in and see with their own eyes what a president does and says, even though it's scripted. It's on a teleprompter and always has been for both parties since teleprompters were invented. But the stagecraft of government remains important. These national rituals remain important. They are one of the few things that unite us and should unite us. And we should watch. And I always watch Barack Obama's, and I hope people will watch Donald Trump's.
Just might be Instagram storied and Snapchatted and other forms
Periscoped
that young people receive their news these days.
I'll never forget, and back in 1981, I'm aging myself, but that's okay. Sitting next to you, I look young. but I'll never forget when I was a college intern.
We're actually friends. So
yeah, we're friends. That's why I can mess with. I'm
who
like
isn't
both
friends
these guys.
With Donna?
But you know, Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States, I was so happy. I mean, during Ronald Reagan's presidency, I was there. During George W. Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, it is so American. It's quintessential American. I look forward to seeing the president. I continue to pray for this president as I pray for every president. My grandmother taught us that when we were kids, growing up, praying for John F. Kennedy and then all the presidents. So I look forward to it. And then the next day, I look forward to commenting.
All right. Well, we'll have to leave it there. So thank you so much to the panelists. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And I'd like to hand things off now to my colleague, Ed O'Keefe, who'll be doing our last panel of the day. So thanks so much, everybody.
Thanks for listening. To hear more interviews from this series and other Washington Post Live programs, visit us at WashingtonPostLive.com.